Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Buca, pallone appoggiato per Cobb Meiners che prova il sinistro! Cobb Meiners! 1-1!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Serie A Spotlight. This is season 2, episode 20, and we're your hosts Matt
and Jake.
As you guys heard, our goal of the week was Cobb Meiners' long-range strike last weekend against Bologna, which ended up leading them to a 2-1 victory. That was the equalizer. What did you make of that goal, brother?
It was purely orgasmic, my brother.
Orgasmic.
What a strike by Cobb Meiners. I love the player, and apparently Liverpool are all over him, but Atalanta have issued a warning saying that they, unless an offer of 40 million arrives, they're not interested, they're not listening. I like when Atalanta play hardball.
Yeah, and I think 40 million is a good, and actually quite a generous price tag for Cobb Meiners, who... Yeah. Is a very incredibly versatile player, and he's proven to be very dangerous anywhere around the box as well. So
yeah, definitely. That would be a coup for Liverpool.
Literally, as it is a coup for Atalanta.
So Serie A spotlight slips.
Serie A spotlight slips. Yes, would you care to let the listeners know what our bet was this week?
So Matthew named this bet. He gave it a title. Remember what you called it when I recommended it to you?
A pure Brexit bet.
Pure Brexit bet, or the original term used was a pussy bet.
Yeah. And a catenaccio bet.
Exactly, catenaccio bet, yeah. It was Spezia Lecce, over 0 goals, and draw Lecce. Now, there was always going to be the risk of a biscotto taking place, you know, where two teams who are low in the table, relegation candidates, settle for a draw, a point each, and they'll gladly take it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I thought that might be the case, but I thought it would be like 1-1, you know, hence the draw Lecce. I tried to play it a bit safe. I thought there'd be a goal this game, especially with the strikers on show. There was in Zola, Colombo, you know, there's a lot of talent on these teams.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the game started and the players walked out and I caught sight of the rain and I was like, we're fucked. We're fucked. It's raining as no one's scoring today. Like, and that was a theme this match. The terrible weather actually affected the football quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And the thing about that game is the reason I thought there were going to be goals was because either team would think, okay, this is a game where we can get 3 points. So either team would gladly go for it. That's the thought process I had. And I also thought that with Nzola performing so well recently and Colombo performing so well recently and other players in both teams performing so well recently, that they'd be keen to show off their skills. But the rain did prove to be a bit too much for both of them.
Remember to follow us, guys, to keep up with our terrible bets at Serie A Spotlight on Instagram. We also have a TikTok account where we can post anything we'd like because copyright does not exist.
Thank you, China.
We also have a Twitter where you can interact with us. Please send us your thoughts, your opinions, your suggestions, your questions, anything you'd like to be discussed on the podcast.
Definitely. This match day was full of tight encounters, so to say, a lot of 1-0s, a lot of draws across the board. It started off with Milan drawing to Roma after having dominated 85 minutes of the game, but they ended up drawing that 2-2, followed by Juve scraping past Udinese 1-0, Sampdoria 0, Napoli 2, so it was last against first. Well, Sampdoria not really last anymore. Mm-hmm. Monza 2, Inter 2, one of the more exciting matches this match day. Lazio 2, Empoli 2 was another one. Bologna 1, Atalanta 2, big win for Atalanta considering how they've been performing. Fiorentina 2, Sassuolo 1, Salernitana 1, Torino 1, a very even affair over there. Verona 2, Cremonese 0, things looking a bit better for Verona since the restart, particularly a certain gentleman named Lazovic. And lastly, Spezia 0, Lecce 0.
Yeah, good. An interesting game week. It was very good, very exciting. Lots of late drama, 3 last-minute equalizers, so plenty to talk about over here. Let's get started with Milan 2, Roma 2.
Or can we skip this one? Maybe.
Good suggestion, but let's get into it. I want to know how you feel about this game, bro. Okay. Let's get into the lineups and we'll talk. So Milan played the usual 4-2-3-1 formation, despite Pioli saying that, formations, they don't matter. It's about putting players out there. Interesting words by Pioli. That's a rough quote, but he actually did say something to that effect. It's about form, it's about teamwork, it's about which players you deploy. He's like 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, he's like, it doesn't really matter.
He's a very good speaker, Pioli, so that must have gotten a bit fucked with translation, I would say.
Could be. Tatarzan was in goal, Theo Hernandez on the left, Calabria on the right, with the centre-back duo of Tomori and Kalulu, the double pivot of Tonali and Benacer, with Leao out wide, Salamakers on the right, Brahim Diaz in the trequartista position, and Giroud up front. Roma played their 3-4-2-1 formation, with Rui Patricio on goal, centre-back trio of Roger Ibanez, Chris Smalling, and Gianluca Mancini. Roberto Mancini is the guy who failed to qualify Italy for the World Cup.
Yeah, and guy that won the Euros with Italy as well.
Yeah, but Ventura was crucified. Mancini is viewed as a hero.
Fair enough.
Celik was on the right, Zalewski was on the left, Pellegrini and Cristante were in the middle, Abraham was playing up front with Zaniolo and Dybala playing off his shoulder.
Yeah.
So it all kicked off to a feisty start with two yellow cards in the first 26 minutes, and then eventually it was the 30th minute where Milan scored through a flying header by Pier Kalulu off a corner of Tonali. When was the last time Milan scored a corner?
Ages, man.
Can't even remember it.
Ages.
Yeah.
I think it's Milan's first headed goal this season.
Oh, could be. Could be, actually. Can't recall another one. I think
that's an actual stat.
Yeah, probably.
Milan's first headed goal this season.
In Serie A, maybe.
Yeah.
It took until the 77th minute for substitute Tommaso Pobega to score the second goal through. It was a good run by him, Giroud. Ran sideways, pulling Chris Smalling away, allowing an opening for Leao to play the ball to Pobega, who finished it off cleanly. And at this point, you know, it seemed to be all done and dusted. There was a tactical change by Pioli. You know, a few players came in, De Ketelaere, Gabbia. The formation looked to change. And then all of a sudden, two set pieces for Roma resulted in two quick goals. In the 87th minute, it was a corner by Lorenzo Pellegrini. Ibanez with the header scores. In the 92nd minute, Vranks gave away a free kick, which was whipped in by Pellegrini and headed into Tatarzano by Matic. And it was Tammy Abraham who managed to score on the rebound. And the game ended shortly after that. Milan 2, Roma 2. Thoughts, bro?
So, very disappointing finish for Milan. Milan, there's always been this criticism about Milan when it comes to killing games. Milan dominated 85 minutes of play easily. Milan were much the better team, and they never looked in danger throughout the entire first 85 minutes, essentially. And then there was a goal conceded from a corner, which I'd like to say that happens. But when Milan have struggled so much in that department, and Milan were made a mockery against Chelsea for the way they defend set pieces, I'd like to think that it would be brushed up for the Roma game in particular, because Roma are so good at set plays, but Milan struggle at defending set plays. So that was always going to be something that was going to threaten Milan, and I'd hope Milan would have had something prepared for that. With that being said, I also believe that the substitutions that Milan make when they're winning a game, and winning a game comfortably, tends to be bringing on young players. So bringing on De Ketelaere, bringing on Vranks, bringing on Gabbia, so on and so forth, bringing on Pobega. And although it's good to give these guys minutes, sometimes in a game against Roma, that, you know, always have something to their arsenal, it would be good to have some players with experience that you can bring on that won't give away silly free kicks on the edge of the area when Milan are struggling at that point.
Yes, that's a very good point. Milan's project right now, as it stands, is to buy young, to develop, to sell for a profit, or to eventually have starters in the future, right? Like, for example, you look at Leao, you look at Tonali, you look at Kalulu. These were all examples of that. Theo Hernandez as well. It's proven to be successful, but at the same time, you're absolutely right. I think Milan need to keep an eye on the market and to bring in a few low-cost bargains or a few...
Yeah.
free agents, you know, that are of a certain age, that have a certain amount of experience, preferably Serie A experience, so that you can bring them on and kill off the game. Krunic would have been perfect. I think he's a player that Milan are really missing.
Yeah, to bring him on in the CDM role when you need to defend a victory, I think he would have been perfect over there. Now, Franks has looked good, but his inexperience really showed in that area. And on that point, even players like Dest, these are all really, really young guys. And sometimes, even though squad rotation is good, I think it's, in certain areas, I think some of the substitutions were, hey, let's give him a run out.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough when you're playing Roma.
When Franks gave away the free kick, Roma had just brought on Belotti alongside Abraham. They had Smalling and Ibanez. They had Matic in there. They had all these giants. They're a team, they're a Mourinho team who score set pieces every single week. Why the hell would you force a foul in the dying moments of the game when you're down by a goal against this Roma side? You've just conceded a set piece. Yeah. I don't get it.
And we know Roma would be playing for the fouls to get free kicks at that point. So it was clearly inexperience that got the better of him over there, along with some street smartness by the player who won the foul. Pellegrini with the way he whipped the ball in. Matic getting there. It's also a debate about this whole zonal marking thing that Milan do. I don't want to get too kind of like technical and stuff like that. But sometimes you just need to go man for man, block the spaces, and just try to cunt the ball away as far as possible, man.
Yeah, literally, bro. I don't understand how you have CDK kind of, you know, kind of marking the jumper on the first goal. You know, like how does that make any sense?
No, and it has to be said that CDK marked Matic terribly and didn't even try to win the header over there. So some criticism needs to go to CDK as well. Yeah. But for the first 85 minutes, Milan had 61% ball possession. They had 12 shots, five of them on target. They had six off target. They had one blocked. They had 28 successful tackles to Roma's 12. They were really, really dominating the game. Milan's football was fluid. It was calm. At no point did we see that urgency over urgency by Milan trying to go forward. They controlled the game really well. Roma looked really weak, in my opinion, throughout the game. From open play, they were bad, in my opinion. But they were patient, man. They were patient and they chose their moments.
Yes, and this is an interesting stat, for example. 16 teams covered more ground than Milan and Roma. Only Sampdoria and Sassuolo covered less. And that just goes to show Roma just sat back. They didn't press whatsoever. And they allowed Milan to play kind of a, not lackadaisical game, but like it wasn't a high intensity game by any means, you know. And Milan totally controlled it. Roma allowed it to happen. And then eventually at the end, they did Roma things, right?
Exactly.
Just another stat to show how poor Roma were. Only Sampdoria had less ball possession than Roma. Roma had the ball for a total of 20 minutes this game.
My
20
God.
Out of 90 minutes, 20 minutes they were on the ball. Okay, Sampdoria were slightly worse. They had the ball for 19 minutes.
And they were against Napoli. That was one before the last against first. Like, this was Milan-Roma.
An interesting thing to note about Milan's left side, you know, everyone praises Milan's left side. But in the top three highest speeds clocked this match day, first was Theo Hernandez with 35.33 kilometers per hour. And third was Leao with 33.98 kilometers an hour.
Jesus.
Radonjic sits between them.
Celik was in absolute hell.
He was in hell. He was, and he looked at a point, I thought he was going to get sent off when he dropped he dropped Leao. But I don't think Leao committed to the drop hard enough to get him sent off, quite frankly. El Shaarawy entered the game quite well. He was one of the four players to complete three dribbles, the best of match day 17. He was quite inspiring when he came on. I feel like that contributed to Roma's victory, of course.
Agreed.
Milan currently sit in third with 37 points, while Roma sit in seventh with 31 points.
But before we move on, guys, I'm handing over to a good friend of ours, Cesco, who's also a Roma fan, and you've heard him on this podcast before. He's joined by another Roma fan, Mattia, and together they discuss the Milan-Roma game and their beliefs on Roma's season so far.
Salam alaikum, Milanisti. I'm joined here with my friend Mattia after Milan-Roma. And to be honest, you have a lot to hear from us because we expected Roma to arrange a bit of their playing style after the pausa. But this is not the case. Mattia, what do you think about Patricio, first of all?
I don't have
Passatore, no?
I don't have no more words for him, honestly, because as I said before to Cesco, we don't have any more even a second keeper to keep
on. Yeah,
that's the thing.
Svilar is even worse. Svilar is much
exactly.
worse. And it's sad when you're coming from Alisson and Szczesny in the same team to Olsen, Paul Lopez, Mirante. Mind you, Mirante could potentially have a Scudetto.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And also I had the memories like for Alisson, Szczesny. Yeah, we had a fucking good keepers.
Yeah, now
it's a shit, honestly.
Yeah, it is. And what do you think about Massa, man? Massa, every time Massa like referees our games, something has to happen. Now, I'm not saying yesterday he gave any Milan any advantage, but he ruined the game yesterday. Like,
for you every time for Milan, it does nothing, honestly.
Yeah, so. Tonali has to miss the next game, and so does Ibanez. And it's extra. He was killing off momentum. And it's frustrating when you're trying to build up some play, and he kills off the game.
Yeah.
We had 3 shots on target, I believe. You guys, 5 shots on target. So you guys not play granke, per se, but we were horrible.
Yeah.
At least in the first half, you could say we were horrible, yes, but at least we killed off your game plan. But man, until that 75th minute, I was prepared to leave yesterday, Mattia.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, only the
I did
last...
not realize we scored the first goal.
No, because only the last like 10 minutes of the game we start playing and was a shit. But for me, even like Pioli had something wrong yesterday because even the changing a bit strange.
Yeah, Pogba.
And, Pobega.
He scored, but because it was a good counterattack, not because
exactly.
Pogba is magnifico.
Yeah,
of course, then one can score against us. I told Matti earlier, if we get Frattesi, he will solve 60% of our problems because our problem is our centrocampo.
Yeah.
He cannot play with Cristante and Pellegrini, not because he was the problem. I really, really, really rate Pellegrini, but he can't give him everything to do, the distribution, the defending, the passing, the everything.
Yeah.
He can't. I believe as well, our formation is a big fucking problem.
Yeah. And we have even to change our playing, no?
Yeah,
because
our playing
style.
We
cannot play anymore with the defense three.
Yes.
It takes off
one extra midfielder. I mean,
exactly.
No wonder we're playing like this. When you take off a midfielder and put a center back, it's kind of logic why we're playing like this. But, I think we should move to the 4-3-3 or 4-2... Yeah. No,
4-3-2-1.
4-3-2-1, sorry. Yeah. And another thing, I don't know why Mourinho had to fight with Karsdorp just to play Celik. If he knew Celik was going to play, I would at least find a good replacement because I can't bother watching Celik anymore, bro.
Exactly.
I cannot watch Celik play anymore. I watched in Pantacalcio.
It reminds me a bit of Piris. I don't know if you...
Piris, Madonna, che pippa. Ah. And Cristante, another guy. He's good at taking the ball, okay, fair, and shooting. What does he do? He tries to dribble and track back on players. This is what I mean. This is why we're suffering so much in the midfield. He cannot play like this. And it was even worse when you used to have Matic, Cristante together. And I think now it's a good thing that Ibanez got squalificato, unless he plays Kumbula instead. No. But Dybala was back, and at least when we play Dybala, we don't lose.
Yeah.
Dybala.
And we scored even a bit more with Dybala.
Yeah. It's ironically, we scored 2 against Milan, but you can't score more than 1 against Bologna and other teams. Tammy, last 2 games, it's like he scored 2 for me because he saved us in the last minute. I was there at the Olympico. And when
four
I saw.
4 points, he saved us.
Yeah, he saved us 4 points. I saw him jump and save that corner. I saw the ball going in. I was like, I nearly fainted on the seat.
I fell down.
Zaniolo, I'm a big lover of Zaniolo. I saw that guy come through the ranks, like his first game at the Bernabeu. I'm biased for Zaniolo. If it was up to me, I could play him every game. But it's like a hopeless case for him lately. It's either he's the problem or the players around him are the problem. Because he runs, he dribbles, he does everything. But either he does the last step wrong.
Yeah, sometimes for me, he wants to do like something too much. But the problem is also that there aren't players like with him, like playing, try to do something. Sometimes he's alone and he doesn't go forward, no?
No, yes. And it has like... The last decisions wrong, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Where he has to shoot, he passes. It's like bipolar. I still believe in Zaniolo, but we have to
change some things.
Is there anyone else we have to mention from the team?
For me, we can stop like this because like the game of Roma. So you know.
Yeah, we could keep on going on and on and on and on and on. And that's it.
We're looking forward to do better, but
we're looking forward to play Fiorentina and hopefully not lose.
Exactly.
But that's it. Technically, we're only 6 points under Juventus, so it's not all that bad.
No.
But we can't keep on playing like this because us fans are suffering.
Yeah,
and it shows on the table how shit we are. In summer. Thank you, guys. Looking forward to hearing our sexy voices again. See you soon. Ciao.
Thank you, guys.
Forza Roma,
Forza Roma sempre.
The next game we're going to be covering is Juve 1, Udinese 0. Juve started off in a 3-5-1-1 formation with Szczęsny in goal and a back line of Sandro, Rugani and Danilo. They had Kostic on the left, they had McKennie on the right and a midfield three of Miretti, Locatelli and Rabiot, with Di Maria in the trequartista role and Moise Kean just ahead of him. Udinese started in a 3-5-2 formation with Silvestri in goal, a backline of Becão, Bijol and Neuwen Pérez. They had Pereira out on the right and Udogi out on the left, and the midfield three of Sandy Lovric, Wallace and Makengo. They had Success and Beto up front. Now, the only goal of the game came in the 86th minute through Danilo. It was a Paredes long ball which was controlled and volleyed beautifully by Chiesa and onto a silver platter for Danilo to tap the ball into the back of the net. Now, we always talk about game changers. This is very prevalent for Juve at the moment. So, in the last match day, they had Kostic from a free kick. In this match day, they had that moment of brilliance over there by Chiesa to put the ball on a plate for Danilo to tap the ball into the back of the net. And it's another 1-0 victory for Juve, putting them in second level on points with Milan, but obviously only conceding 7 goals this season. They're currently ranked above Milan.
Yes, that was, first of all, a fantastic play by Juve. Mm-hmm. You look at them all game, they had been knocking against Udinese. Their offensive play, their maneuvers were better this game than they have been recently.
Agreed.
But this was a masterstroke. First of all, that long ball by Paredes was gorgeous to Chiesa. Chiesa, amazing awareness to square it. Something, for example, Orsolini against Atalanta. He was in the exact same position with his head and he went for a goal. Granted, he just scored. But great awareness by Chiesa to square it to Danilo and the captain, fantastic, over there just scoring the winner. But I think, man, the main thing to highlight about Juve is how fucking solid they are in defense and how patient they are and how they don't give up. They leave it too late, but they get the job done. And another super professional performance by them against a tough side, to be honest.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Juve are capable of losing a game at the moment with the way that they're performing. Not because they're performing so obviously well, but it's just the way that they're carrying themselves in the game. We know that 1-0, only winning 1-0 and in the last 10 minutes of the game, pretty much always isn't exactly sustainable. It results in injuries, it results in fatigue, so on and so forth. It results in a lot of stress lines for fans.
Or a late equalizer.
or a late equalizer as well. But if you don't concede, you're not going to lose.
That's it.
And that is exactly what Juve are doing this season, and it's exactly what Milan did last season. You remember those 1-0s in a row? Another clean sheet when Tomori said that.
Another clean sheet, 1-0. That was amazing.
And it's the same thing for Juve this year. They are solid as hell defensively.
It's true. And they gave Udinese a tough time over here. You know, they had 14 shots, 4 of them were on target, 7 were off target, 3 were blocked. This compared to Udinese's 11 shots, 3 of them were on target. So to be honest, you look at the stats, it's a pretty even affair, but Juve just have that certain street smart to them. Yeah. You know, that experience, that Allegri Satanism that gets them over the line.
Exactly. And Udinese haven't been their best. But they put in a decent performance over here. They were simply outplayed by Juve. And shout out to Silvestri, who had a couple of fantastic saves in this game. And shout out to Di Maria. Having him on the pitch and having him down the middle as well really showcases his creativity and his dribbling in tight spaces. His close ball control is unbelievable. He could take 4 turns with 2 touches when he's on the ball. He's absolutely magnificent. I was seeing a couple of highlights of him from this game, and wow, what a player to have on your team.
He's amazing. Di Maria is one of my personal favorite players. And that's the thing with Juve. You know, I feel like they are coached heavily in the defensive side. Like, I'm sure Allegri's tactics are all about defense, defense, defense. Then when it comes to bombing forward, it's all about individual brilliance.
Yeah.
You have Kostic, you have Di Maria, you have Chiesa, you know, you've got Rabiot, who has his moments as well. These are the guys that have been winning the games for Juve.
Exactly.
And they're still missing Milik as well with the free kick.
Yeah. And they're still missing Dusan Vlahovic. They're still missing Pogba. They're missing a bunch of players. But a consistent attacking outlet for them has proven to be Kostic, who even got 4 crosses, the highest this match day. What an attacking outlet that guy is down the left, man.
Yeah, he's incredible, honestly. What a signing by them. Funnily enough, it was Lovric who was second with the most crosses whipped in. He whipped in 3. So this game had the 2 best crossers of the match day, both ending in itch.
Yeah. You mentioned that this was a tight affair. And just to showcase that, Juve had 50.5% ball possession to Udinese's 49.5% ball possession.
We dominated.
I don't think Juve's game is about domination, but I think it's about, you know, just the ability to kill off games. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they spend the entire game just wearing out their opponents and testing the waters, and then they just have a moment of brilliance towards the end that gets them over the line, essentially. That brings Juve up to second. They're on 37 points, like I said earlier, level with Milan. With Napoli ahead of them on 44 points. So quick maths, that is 7 points ahead of Juve and Milan. On the other hand, Udinese are in 8th place still on 25 points. They are now 6 points behind Roma and 2 points ahead of Fiorentina and Torino.
Fantastic. The next game we're going to be covering is Sampdoria 0, Napoli 2. Sampdoria played a 3-4-1-2 formation with Audero in goal, Murru, Nuitink and Murillo at the back, Augello on the left, Leris on the right, Vieira and Rincon as a midfield double pivot with Vera in front of them, and Lammers and Gabbiadini as the 2 trees up front. Napoli deployed the usual 4-3-3 formation with Meret in goal, Di Lorenzo on the right, Mario Rui on the left, Juan Jesus and Ming Jaekim formed the centre-back partnership. Elmas, Lobotka and Anguissa were in the middle, with Politano out on the right, Kvaratskhelia on the left, and Osimhen up front, the formidable Victor Osimhen. In the opening moments of the game, Sampdoria gave away a penalty, Politano stepped up to take it, and Audero got a good hand on his low and hard shot, which then hit the post. Sampdoria were clearly inspired after this. Vera took a shot from outside that threatened the goal. Nuitink had a big miss on a header from a corner, but eventually Mr. Inevitable Victor Osimhen in the 19th minute managed to score. It was an early cross in the near post by Mario Rui. It was met by Osimhen on the half volley and it hit the back of the net. In the 38th minute, Thomas Rincon did Thomas Rincon things, where he had where he mistimed the sliding tackle into a full speed Osimhen, and it turned out to be the last man. It was at an awkward angle, so it didn't quite look to be a red at first, but then you realize, you know, it's the denial of a goal scoring opportunity, a clear goal scoring opportunity, boom, red card. That's what you get of a player with the experience of Thomas Rincon, you know, a CV like that. Age on his side and age against him, rather, on his side as when it comes to the experience.
Yeah.
And he fucks the game for Sampdoria because there was no coming back. 10 men against Napoli, you're doomed.
Exactly.
You know, and in fact, it was the 82nd minute where VAR awarded a penalty to Napoli and Elmas converted, going the opposite direction and high into the top corner this time.
Yeah.
What do you make of this game, bro?
So, I mean, I don't think there is much to make of it. I think Sampdoria still looked good in the opening moments of the match. They looked much better than they were before. They defended better. I think Neutink is such an asset over there. They went forward better. I think Lammers has been such an asset over there. And everything is just working a bit more fluidly than it was before for Sampdoria. They're retaking their shape a bit faster than they were. I think that was because they were very wary of the Napoli side that they were facing. But all it takes is a stupid red card by one of your teammates. In this case, it was Thomas Rincon. And then after that, if you get a red card in the 38th minute against Napoli, there's no way you're walking out with anything out of that match. And Napoli managed to, you know, get away with 3 points and kill the game off in the 82nd minute.
Yeah, and that's it. I was kind of disappointed at the red card, man, because I thought that Sampdoria were going to give them a good second half. Again, they attacked really well, and I feel like Neutink really brought them defensive stability.
Yeah.
Lammers, I'm not too keen on. He's more involved here than he was at Empoli, but I don't know. He seems a bit rusty for now. We'll have to wait for the rust to settle, I guess. Wait for him to get used to the system.
Yeah, his movement is definitely better than any other striker that was representing Sampdoria this season, which gives them at least a little bit more excitement. They can play the ball in certain positions where perhaps they didn't used to play it before. A special shout out to me, an outstanding performer in this game was definitely Audero, stopping Politano's penalty, something Mike Maignan wasn't able to do earlier on this season. And Napoli had 24 shots, 8 of them on target. So Audero had to deal with all of those. He did have a fantastic performance over here. And again, man, if it weren't for the red card, maybe things would have been different.
Yeah, totally, man. A fantastic goalkeeper. I believe he's a Juve youth product. One of the ones that had gone for an inflated price.
No way.
Yeah, no way, dude. But yeah, at the end of the day, it was all Napoli. We had 66% ball possession, 24 shots, as you mentioned, to Sampdoria's 9. Sampdoria had 2 shots on target compared to Napoli's 8. Napoli passed them to death eventually after the red card. They had 608 passes, 91% successful passes out of the total. The best of the match day. Mario Rui completed 87 passes alone, the most of match day 17. He had a fantastic game, Mario Rui.
Madonna. Yeah. 87 passes for a left back is mad, man.
Yeah, man, he's like Theo Hernandez level contribution.
So many good left backs in the league, huh?
Yeah.
Very good left backs.
And I feel like this often happens when you play a team, when a big team plays against a team that gets a red card early on, they just end up dominating all the statistics.
Exactly. Yeah.
Another one, Napoli created 17 goal scoring chances, the second best of the match day, inferior to Torino's 19, by the way. Wow. They had 24 attempts, the most of the match day. Napoli had the ball for 36 and a half minutes, the best position start of the match day. Sampdoria had the ball for 19 minutes, 35%. Look, listen to this. Okay, so Sampdoria had the ball for 19 minutes, Napoli for 36. That leaves 35 minutes.
Oh my God.
35 minutes of play halted. This is why the World Cup stoppage time system was introduced.
I mean, that's the way it should be, no? Isn't it 90 minutes of play that they're after? No, ref says, okay, let me add 30 seconds whenever there's a substitution. No, let me add this amount of time every time a free kick is awarded. Should stop the clock and the clock continues. Or add 15 minutes at the end of the game. The game is there to be played over 90 minutes. We are lucky that it's not the stop clock system where on 90 minutes a massive buzz goes around the stadium and it'll end up being like a basketball thing where everyone starts shooting from half pitch at that fucking point.
Yeah,
but 35 minutes wasted is, it's not football.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is the polar opposite of what Agnelli had said. Agnelli, when he was, you know, he was on the board of the FIFA directors or something, he's just a person whose opinion is extremely respected, or was extremely respected. He said that football's biggest rival right now is not other sports. It's not the NBA. It's not the bloody Olympics. It's esports. It's League of Legends. It's Fortnite.
Okay.
Okay. Because nowadays, the new generation coming up, I don't know if you're listening, Cesco, the attention span is obviously lower. A kid will find it difficult to sit through 90 minutes of football.
Mm-hmm.
What this does, it makes a football game longer, which for us is great. No, yeah. It's better.
Yeah.
You know? The more football, the better.
Exactly.
But for these guys who can barely sit through 90 minutes of football, does it make sense to make it even longer?
This is one of the things Florentino Perez and Agnelli were after when it comes to the Super League. One thing they said is make every game 60 minutes so that it gets more viewership.
There we go.
Because of the young generation. And do I agree that the younger generation are used to fueling their minds with this quick content on social media?
Instant gratification.
It's the cocaine of social media. You watch one, you just want another, you just want another, you just want another. Football is something, to me, what I enjoy about football is I like watching every single piece of movement that happens on the TV. If a player keeps the ball in a nice way, if a player passes and goes in a nice manner, if a player tracked back properly. But people just want to see goals.
Yeah.
And they want to see, you know, an hour is a good time for kids to watch football. But to me, this is the game that was created. It is 90 minutes. It's a chess game. It's 11 men against 11 men, two armies, over 90 minutes. And if it's 90 minutes, all I care is that the 90 minutes are played. Mm. It's open play and it's 90 minutes.
Exactly. These younglings can watch the extended highlights. You know,
exactly.
They're available.
No exactly. Problem. There you go. Leave the football to us.
Yeah. Politano had the most goal scoring chances of the match day, and Sampdoria completed a grand total of one dribble, the worst of the match day, alongside Lecce, Spezia and Torino, aka the nerds.
Exactly.
Napoli are currently in first with 44 points as they prepare to take on Juve, who are in second with 37 points this Friday. That's going to be a juicy affair.
Very juicy.
While Sampdoria sit in 19th with 9 points.
The next game we're going to be covering is Monza 2, Inter 2. Before I get to the lineups, I just want to provide a bit of an update and say that Inter have advanced in the Coppa Italia after beating Parma in extra time through an Acerbi header, making it 2-1. Parma were winning the game. It was a fantastic goal by Parma. Gigi Buffon had a fantastic performance as a 44-year-old starting at the San Siro. What a spectacle that game was. Another time Inter were struggling against the Serie A team.
Buffon turns 45 in 2 weeks' time. And that was his 50th appearance at San Siro. Amazing.
Wow.
Amazing to see. And he was really good. He had a fantastic save on Dzeko.
He had a super save, man. He had a super save. But let's get into this.
Hoi!
What?
Milan's starting lineup against Torino in the Coppa Italia tonight is out.
I saw a rumor.
It starts in
an hour. It looked terrible. It looked like Milan aren't even trying. And I think that Coppa Italia would be a good route for Milan this year.
Yeah, I think it would be an option to win. But I still think Milan obviously are planning on winning. But look at this lineup, bro. So it's a 3-5-2.
Oh, okay.
Tatarzano in goal.
Uh-huh.
Kalulu, Gabi and Tomori at the back.
Not bad, not terrible.
Salamakers on the right.
I like it.
Dest on the left.
No.
Pobega, Tonali and Vranks in the middle.
No! No.
De Ketelaere and Diaz up front as a striking partnership.
De Ketelaere.
And Diaz.
And Diaz up front. Mm-hmm. Pass the lighter when you're done with it, please. Thank you, brother.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes against Torino. Torino tend to take Milan to extra time when it comes to the Coppa. But
anyway. Yes, especially if you're starting that squad against them. We're acting like Torino are a walk in the park, or we're going to focus on Serie A or Champions League. But whatever, man. We'll see what happens.
I mean, this should technically in paper be enough to take Milan over the line. The problem is that, like, for example, the Ketelaere is flopping, you know, not flopping. He hasn't hit the ground running.
Yeah, exactly.
Just say
exactly.
That. You have Dest on the left who played. I saw him play once on the left and he didn't look good at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we'll see anyway. That's a different story.
We'll keep you guys updated. So Monza 2, Inter 2. For Monza, it was the 3-4-2-1 formation. It was Di Gregorio on goal and the back three of Itzo, Mari and Marlon. They had Carlos Augusto, of course, out on the left. They had Birindelli out on the right with Machin and Pessina in the middle. They had Mota on the left, Churia on the right and Petagna up front. For Inter, it was a 3-5-2. Onana in goal with a backline of Skriniar, Acerbi and Bastoni. Darmian on the right, Di Marco on the left, and a midfield three of Barella, Çalhanoğlu and Mkhitaryan. Lautaro Martinez was up front alongside Dzeko.
Isn't it crazy how Pablo Mari got stabbed and still managed to make a return to the field faster than Mania?
Literally, Matt. But after this performance,
yeah,
maybe you would have wished to take some more time to get over the trauma. Yeah. So in the 10th minute, Bastoni's cross into the far post was half-volleyed into the near post by Darmian. That is, quite frankly, a classic Inter goal. If it's not Di Marco, it's Bastoni. If it's not them, it's Çalhanoğlu, so on and so forth. Just 1 minute later, however, there was a really clever ball by Pessina that put Churi in a good position to place the ball past Onana into the far corner on his favoured left foot. Just 11 minutes later, and then Lautaro stole the ball off of a slow Mari who controlled the ball in defence. And with Di Gregorio out of position, Lautaro had no problem converting. He gave the ball away in defence when his keeper was out of position. Yeah. It was absolutely dreadful. A few moments later, well, not a few moments later, but throughout the game, Di Marco scraped the top crossbar, Lautaro hit the post with a stunning strike as well. But then in the 92nd minute, Monza were on the attack to find that equalizer, and the ball was initially headed by the former Inter player Caldirola, but it took a significant deflection off of the shoulder of Dumfries and into the far corner. So it did end up going down as a Denzel Dumfries on goal in the 92nd minute. So, very entertaining encounter. Inter looked good. Monza looked good. It resulted in a draw. Inter did look better than Monza, but mm-hmm. Monza did enough to get the draw. What did you make of it?
I think Monza really played to Inter's level. These things always happen when you play a lower side in the league. Mm-hmm. Like Churia scored. That's his first ever goal in the Serie A. Calderola got the winner. The equalizer. Ruolo Delex, he's a former Inter player. Mm-hmm. So these things tend to happen. I couldn't help but notice that Inter's build-up play was once again stalled by Lukaku's lack of sharpness. And now he's injured and he's going to be out for some time. Mm. Probably good again for some mental clarity. I'm starting to think this guy needs a lot more time out to get back to himself, man.
Yeah, I would agree with you over there. I'm not sure if it's time out that he needs.
Or time on the pitch, right?
Or a boot camp. Mm. You know, when a couple of seasons ago when Milan were on a losing streak and when they couldn't win a single game, boot camp. Close all doors.
Retiro.
Ah, exactly.
But the team has to be in crisis. That's a punishment to the players, essentially. And it wouldn't be fair on his teammates.
No, but I'm saying like a solo one.
Solo retiro.
For fucking Lukaku. Because quite frankly, I mean, look, he had a great season at Inter and he helped win them the league a couple of seasons ago under Conte. He was signed for 80 million by Chelsea. He went there and it was his lack of professionalism that lost him that job, essentially.
Yeah.
He cried and cried, went back to Inter out of shape and he's simply not performing. At this point, at the end of the season, if things keep on going the way they are, Inter aren't going to want Lukaku. Chelsea aren't going to want Lukaku. And did you see Gareth Bale retired at 33 recently because no one could afford him and because he was always injured? Same thing can happen to Lukaku. Yeah.
It could. I still see a future for Lukaku. I think he'll recover. I think he'll be back. Maybe not with Inter, maybe not with Chelsea, but somewhere where a new environment where he feels the support of the fans, where he has less pressure on him, maybe. That could be better for him.
It's also probably a bad mental space he's in after his shocking World Cup performance, rushed back from injury. Now he has another injury. You know, I just hope the guy is dealing with that in the most efficient way possible, speaking to his teammates, finding his form, and hopefully we'll see him getting goals in the near future.
So Monza drew 2-2 to Inter.
Yeah.
Do you think they got their bus full of whores, or do they have to beat them?
Did they get their bus full of whores?
Because Berlusconi, for those who don't know, actually said to the team, like, if you bring a beautiful victory against one of the top teams, he mentioned Juve and Milan specifically. I'll get you a Pullman di Troia, which means a bus full of whores, literally.
Exactly. Excuse the language over here, ladies and gents. But I think so, especially with the goal being in the last minute. He would have been hyped, Berlusconi, man. He would have been on the phone straight after. No?
Galliani lost his shit at that Calderola goal, man.
One day, bro. I remember 10 years ago, Galliani looking this old, screaming when Milan score in the last minute, and me thinking he's gonna drop dead. Like, I'm really scared one day he's gonna get up and just collapse, like, from celebrating a bit too hard.
He's like our great grandmother, Galliani. He was old when we were young, and he is old when we're adults. Like, you know, it's crazy.
I wonder what he looked like as a young chap.
He had hair. Yeah.
No way.
Monza had 55% ball possession. They had 13 shots, 4 of them on target. Inter had 11 shots, 3 of them on target. So you can see the stats were quite even over here. Monza edging it slightly. This was a high-intensity game, contrary to the Milan-Roma game. Only Lazio covered more ground than Inter this match day, and Monza were a close third. It was fast-paced. Mm-hmm. Pessina's the player who covered the most ground this match day. And Lautaro Martinez was one of the 4 players to complete 3 dribbles, the best of match day 17. He's alongside El Shaarawy, as we mentioned. There was also Danny Mota, who completed the dribbles for Monza. Monza had 6 successful dribbles, and it's the second best of the match day behind Fiorentina.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I don't think Inter had a bad performance. I think there were bad aspects to their game that slowed down their play. For example, Lukaku, as you mentioned. I think Monza showed a lot of heart and a lot of spirit, and that's why they were able to get back into the match. I do, however, still believe that this is a very disappointing result for Inter, especially after a big win last week where they handed league leaders Napoli their first loss of the season. That was a huge result for Inter. And then in their next match, they drop points against Monza, and now they only just scrape past Parma. So maybe the issues are still there. They're certainly capable of good performances, but they're also certainly capable of very weak performances.
Yes, sir. Inter currently sit in 4th with 34 points, while Monza sit in 15th with 18 points. The next game we're going to be covering is Lazio 2, Empoli 2, another lost second winner. Lazio lined up with their usual 4-3-3 formation with Provedel in goal, Marusic, Romagnoli, Chiasale and Lazzari at the back, Luis Alberto Cataldi, Milinkovic-Savic in the middle, Zaccagni on the left, Anderson on the right, and Immobile up front. Empoli lined up with their 4-3-2-1 formation, the Christmas tree formation. Vicario was in goal, Stojanovic on the right, Parisi on the left with Luperto and Ismaili as a centre-back partnership. Marin, Grassi and Fazzini in the middle, Baldanzi and Caputo playing behind Satriano. Interesting to see Caputo on that role over there.
Very.
Who had a pretty good game apart from one wasteful moment. Things got started nice and early for Lazio, who had a corner. Luis Alberto crossed it in as it was flicked on by Philip Anderson and Caputo, and passed Vicario. It was technically an own goal by Caputo, but I believe it was given to Philip Anderson.
I know for sure it was given to Philip Anderson because Luis Alberto got an assist for me on Fantacalcio.
there we go. In the 54th minute, Mattia Zaccagni found the back of the net after some confusion in the box. Zaccagni managed to chip the ball over Vicario, who was sliding out. Zaccagni scored with his new neck tattoo, which I'm not a fan of.
Not a massive fan of massive text tattoo on the back of necks or anywhere.
Cursive text. I'm not a big fan. Savic hit the post from about 35 yards out. What a strike that was.
Monstrous.
Amazing. Nice to see him getting his shit together after last week's mediocre performance.
Yeah.
And then it was in the 83rd minute that Empoli started their comeback. There was a good counter. Now this is what confuses me. Why are Lazio committing so many men forward when they're 2-0 up?
I don't know.
Like, Empoli had a numerical advantage on the counter. Cambiaghi and Caputo both got in behind the defense. Cambiaghi provided a low cross and Caputo controlled it and finished it.
Suddenly
they're 2-1.
It looked really raw and sloppy by Caputo, the control and the finish. But Cambiaghi got in behind the defense well. It is shocking to me that Lazio were going forward. I think it comes down to a lack of respect for their opponents.
Probably, yes. I think it's more like, hey, let's see if we can score, let's go. Yeah. You know? And then in the 92nd minute, eventually, Razvan Marin smacked the ball into the top corner from outside inside the area after a clearance by Philip Anderson. And the build-up play to this by Rami ended Pedro's career by knocking the ball past him and getting around him.
Yeah, he was so flat-footed, Pedro, in that. Incredibly flat-footed. But by Rami does that sometimes. He turns into Zinedine Zidane. And that was one of those moments. The ball was crossed in, cleared poorly by Philip Anderson. Mm-hmm. And good finish at the end of it from outside the area by Marin.
All of Lazio's hard work for nothing, for 1 point. You know, they covered the most distance this round. They were in top 3-4 shots taken. They were in the top 3-4 key passes played, top 3 in ball possession. You know, Empoli, the only stat they had to their advantage this match, there was the dribbling stat. They were the best dribblers alongside Fiorentina. But they also had the fewest goal-scoring chances with 4 of the match day. Yet they managed to score 2 of those chances. Lazio dominated the game at 54% ball possession, and they had 18 shots, 4 of them on target. Empoli only had 2 shots on target, and they were both good.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that pretty much sums up the game. It does, to be honest, man.
I really like this Empoli team. I really think they have a certain flair to them. They have a really nice little unit over there. Lazio, on the other hand, naive as Milan this match day.
No, I would agree. And you look at the Lazio we're seeing just before the break. Now, okay, just before the break, they had a devastating defeat against Juve. But before that, we're talking about Lazio pushing, man. Pushing in that top 4 region. Well, this is classic Lazio, to be really brutally honest about them. They get going the same way they got going last year with a number of 4-0s, the same number they had this season. And then they just...
Plateau.
And I don't know if it's people figuring them out. I don't know if it's just a group of players or the owners or whatever that are causing this to happen, but I would be livid with that ending to the game if I was Maurizio Sarri, particularly with Empoli's first goal.
Sarri has mentioned many things that hinder him from playing his optimal football. With Lazio, he mentioned the pitch not being to standard. He mentioned the players not being to standard. So yeah, Lazio need to improve in some aspects over here. They currently sit in 5th with 31 points, while Empoli sit in 13th with 19 points.
Before I move on to the next game, I just want to highlight Luis Alberto, because I think him again in the midfield, he showcased another great performance by him. He really adds a lot of fluidity to their midfield. And I think in certain games, he should start the game and then just be substituted out for maybe a more conservative player. And I think in certain games, he could be brought on to provide an additional attacking outlet. And now it's just down to if Luis Alberto accepts that being his role.
Luis Alberto could slot into any of the top 4 teams in Italy.
Agreed. And he'll probably start in an attacking midfield role at Milan pretty much any day.
That would be a clever signing.
Definitely. The next game we're going to be covering is Bologna 1, Atalanta 2. So for Bologna, it was a 4-2-3-1 formation with Skorupski in goal. Lico Giannis as a left back and Posch as a right back. Lukumi and Sao Mauro forming the formidable back two. Dominguez and Gary Medel in midfield with Soriano out on the left and Orsolini out on the right. Ferguson was in the attacking midfield role with Sansone up front. For Atalanta, it was a 3-4-1-2 formation, Musso on goal, and a back line of Toloi, Palomino, and Scalvini. They had Hatteberg out on the right and Ruggeri out on the left. Midfield 3 of Deron, Koopmeiners, and Pasalic just ahead of them, with Hojlund and Zapata up front. Now, things got going in the 6th minute. Orsolini cut in and curled the ball low and hard into the far corner. It was a brilliant goal by him. I forget that Orsolini is a player that's full of flair, and when he gets going, his turn of pace is fantastic. And one movement and one shot, it all took 1 second, and it was in the back of the net. It was a brilliant goal by Orsolini, and it really got things going there for Bologna.
Explosive. He's an explosive player.
However, and then in the 46th minute, it was in the 47th minute, there was a bullet strike from around 30 yards out straight into the corner of the net by Tiun Koopmeiners. What a fucking goal by him. Our goal of the week. So we already described that as well as we can. Just a moment of magic by him. He has that so often. Jeremy Boga did lay the ball off to him. A couple of moments later, in the 58th minute, so just 11 minutes later, there was a great run and pass by Boga to Hojlund on the break, who dinked the ball over the oncoming Skorupski. Hojlund with another goal. Boga with his second assist of the night. So Atalanta get away with 3 points against Bologna, who have been very good. Bologna recently, so a massive 3 points for Atalanta. What do you think?
Totally. Bologna scored early, but they couldn't keep up with Atalanta's intensity. You know, as we mentioned last week, they crowd the box so well, Atalanta. They push so many players out. They have Hatteburn and Ruggeri out wide who cross the ball in relentlessly. I believe it was Coop Miners and Ruggeri whipped in 3 crosses each, which is the second most of the match day behind Kostic, who whipped in 4. But that's 6 crosses from 2 players. Amazing for Atalanta. Yeah. Hoyland is like Haaland from Wish. You know, so Hoyland.
Hoyland.
He's a bright player, very sharp. I'm a big fan of Hoyland. We'll see how he develops. He's in good hands, let's just say that. Yeah. Atalanta are no strangers to developing beasts.
Exactly, especially up front, man. And it seems like with every game, he's getting slightly better. Yeah, it's like a consistent slow rise for him. I have to say I was a big fan of the substitutions that were carried out, pardon me, by Gasperini in this match day. Boga really turned things around when coming on for Mario Pasalic. He had some great moments. He was straying out left quite a lot, and that's where he is so dangerous. We know how Bologna's defense could be at times, and he was just attacking them and attacking them and attacking them, and that led to him getting 2 assists. Okay, one was a layoff to Coop Miners, but the second one was absolutely brilliant by him. So maybe this is something we could start seeing more of by Jeremy Boga. Yeah.
He looked really comfortable this game. He was the only player to get 2 assists this match day. Very good performance by him, of course.
Yeah.
I also want to highlight the performance of Gary Medel, who recovered 14 balls. I wonder if one of them was Francesco Acerbi's.
No. Oh my God. No way. No way did you just say that. That's so bad, bro. That's so bad.
Acerbi scored an amazing goal against Parma to win them the game against them there in the Coppa. No, it was amazing, yes. Gary Medel had a very good performance. He's kind of similar to Thomas Rincon in the fact that he's an experienced veteran player who is a bit hot-headed. But when he keeps it cool, Medel is a massive asset to Bologna.
I think we've seen a lot of that hot-headedness kind of drift away from Medel when he realized his role at the club. He's such a leader in that camp that sure, he'll get yellow cards here and there. He's no stranger to yellow and red cards. But his leadership qualities as well, in particular this season and last season, have been brilliant. He's been played center back, he's been played in defensive midfield. And I have to say, I missed him a lot in midfield. He's so good over there, man. He had so much stability. And it does as well allow Dominguez to be a bit more creative. And going forward, Ferguson also comes back quite a bit to partner Medel when that happens. Bologna have a very nicely balanced team over here. I think that Motta did exactly what he had to do to put this team together. They were simply beaten by, on the night, a better team in Atalanta, who were just attacking after minute 6, really.
Do you think the result would have been different had Arnautovic not been injured?
It's difficult to say. I don't think it would have been much different. I think definitely the team would have been more fired up to, you know, get a game to get a goal to kill the game rather than just score one and settle to the defensive area. But that's the thing. I don't think it was their choice to settle on defense. I think they got outrun by Atalanta. I think they got outpowered by Atalanta. We did see a bit of what we were used to seeing more out of Atalanta, especially in the second half of the match. And I think a lot of that had to do with Jeremy Boga giving them that outlet and running forward the same way Gosens used to, the same way Papu Gomez used to.
Yeah.
And then with someone like Hoyland up front to finish the chances. I have to say, once again, Duván Zapata wasn't great. and he did end up getting replaced by Ederson, who, as well, I haven't really seen Ederson perform too well.
Ederson hasn't hit the ground running, but he plays Salernitana next, and that was his ex-team, so he'll probably score.
Yeah.
Palomino, by the way, bro, again, another monstrous performance. I'm really happy he's back. I really like him. And to think he's only playing at this level because he was hand-picked by Papu Gomez.
That's crazy, man. That is crazy. Yeah. And it's such a shame that there were certain allegations against him that kept him out of the game for so long, because he comes back in and he's miles ahead of the other centre-backs at Atalanta. Okay. Clearly their best defender and one of their best players this season. Atalanta sit in 6th on 31 points. They're actually level with Lazio, who are in 5th, and level with Roma, who are in 7th, On the other hand, Bologna are in 12th place on 19 points, who are also level with Lecce, who are 11th, and Empoli, who are 13th.
The next game we're going to be covering is Fiorentina 2, Sassuolo 1. Fiorentina played the 4-2-3-1 formation with Terracciano in goal, Biraghi as the left back, Venuti as the right back, with Milinkovic and Igor as the centre back partnership. Duncan and Bianco played in the middle, with Kwame and Ikone on the flanks, Bonaventura in the free role in the middle with Cabral up front. Sassuolo played a 4-3-3 formation with Consigli in goal, Tolian and Rogerio as the fullbacks, Ferrari and Ruan as the centre-back pairing. Frattesi, Obiang and Traore played in the middle with Berardi on the right, Lauriente on the left and Pinamonti up front. It took late for this to get started. The first half was pretty uneventful. No goals over there. But then in the 48th minute, just 3 minutes after coming on, Riccardo Saponara bounced a volley over Consigli after some confusion in the area. Confusion in the area, meaning a Ferrari mistake.
It was given away by Ferrari again.
It's becoming too common.
Again,
this recurring theme.
This happened the last match day as well, man. When will they do something about their defense?
I don't know. I told Mintov the second Saponara came on, I'm like, bro, he's scoring or assisting like this game. He's too smart for this shit defense. He's gonna fuck them up. And in fact, later on, he had a brilliant ball to Gonzalez, who had an open header and he missed it. But anyway, in the 57th minute, VAR caught a handball by Dodo and it was converted by Berardi, sending the goalkeeper the wrong way.
One of the most reliable penalty kick takers in the league, Berardi.
Yeah, an amazing player. Mr. Sassuolo.
Yeah.
In the 91st minute, there was a penalty given the other way. Ruan handled it this time. It was caught by VAR. Nico Gonzalez stepped up, who was described by the manager Italiano to be mentally unavailable.
Yeah.
So he stepped up and he scored, which will do wonders for his confidence. He sent Consigli the wrong way. Consigli has fallen injured, by the way.
Oh, has he?
Yeah.
Well, probably too much in the shower, no?
Yes, probably.
I liked seeing the way Fiorentina reacted to the penalty being awarded. Right away handing it to Nico Gonzalez, who was brilliant from the spot. He had a good game as well after he came on. He was involved. And we always say that he is a player that is vital in the second half of the season. And this could be the start of that. His teammates handing him the penalty in the 91st minute when the stakes are high. He keeps a cool head and he converts. The confidence and the balls on this man to step up. And the manner in which he took the penalty as well, quite central, just relied on sending the keeper the wrong way, relied on his technique. Fantastic stuff by Nico Gonzalez. Hopefully we'll get to see more of that throughout the entirety of the season now.
For sure, I certainly hope so. He was a really good player on his day.
Yeah.
Fiorentina dominated the possession 53%, although it didn't really feel like that, to be honest.
It really didn't.
Sassuolo, I think we're better in the first half, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Fiorentina had 15 shots, 5 of them on target. Sassuolo had 16 shots, 4 of them on target. Berardi had the most attempts of the match day with 6. Mintov said last week that Berardi was shooting like he was a kid in the playground, just having it. And once again, that proved to be the case. Fiorentina proved to be a less tactically oriented side, as we saw earlier at the start of the season. They're given more freedom. In fact, they're completing many dribbles and they're up there in the statistics as well.
Yeah.
No team covered less distance than Sassuolo this round, by the way. So they do seem uninspired right now. Something seems off with Sassuolo, man.
Something does seem off with Sassuolo. We always kind of look to choose one thing that's not that good about Sassuolo this season. We've blamed their defense. We've said because they replaced so many players up top. We've said it's because Lopez is injured in the midfield.
But that's a massive one. Lopez being injured, that's their metronome.
These are all massive ones. They're all massive ones. Their defense is shit. They're losing their metronome in the midfield and he's been replaced by Obiang, who, although he has his own skill set, he doesn't add that fluidity that Sassuolo are known for. Lauriente's great, Berardi's great, Pinamonti just still. He was more involved in this game, but not exactly in a great way.
He just wins penalties by shooting into hands. That's all he's doing lately. Honestly, I want to see Alvarez. Mintov's right. I want to see Alvarez.
Want to see Alvarez.
And he waits long. I have to bring him on. I don't know why he doesn't bring him on sooner, especially if Pinamonti misfiring.
Yeah. There's also the loss of Torsvet in midfield as well. That is massive for them. But again, a good team with a good manager adapts to these situations. I'm not going to compare them to Juve and Milan, who've dealt with a plethora of injuries and we're still at the top of their game. Of course, I'm not going to compare them to those teams. But Sassuolo haven't gotten a well-earned 3 points and haven't outplayed a team in such a long time. Yeah. And I'm just starting to think that this isn't exactly a great squad, man. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. And they're going to keep losing players if they keep removing players themselves and if they keep performing the way they are. Berardi would be the next one out. And, well, Fratesi is the next one out, actually.
Our resident Sassuolo fan, Mintov, highlighted in the last episode, he said that Sassuolo are a team that's run almost as a business. Their stadium is far from the city.
Yeah.
They have no fans, virtually. You know, you look at their stadium, it's always full of opposition fans, totally dominated, no matter who they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
Matthias asked us a question. He said, if Sassuolo were to sack Dionisi, who should they get instead? And there are quite a few free agents right now, managers.
There are quite a few, but probably a lot of them are too big for Sassuolo, so to say. I think...
Yeah, there are like Tuchels, the Zidanes, they're not going to go.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think that they do need a slightly more traditional coach that would really focus on solidifying the formation, solidifying the identity, solidifying the shape, and prioritize that rather than the fluidity that they're so, you know, known.
So you think they should shift to a pragmatic approach? Like,
I think they should. I think that's the only way they'll concede lesser goals than they're already conceding, and that'll already put them in the right position. I think their players are creative. I don't think they need someone like Ranieri, who is the first person that came to mind.
In fact, I think Ranieri would be my shot.
He would really encourage that fluid play that Sassuolo are so well known for. But I think that still leaves the terrible defense that is over there. I don't think he encourages a back four that is so solid. It would be interesting to see, but I think they'd still struggle defensively in that case.
Di Francesco could, I think, do a good job there. I mean, he's already taken this team to Europa League. You know, he got them promoted all the way from Serie A, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, took them all the way to the Europa League. Like, why not? He's in his comfort zone. He flopped afterwards. He had a good run with Roma in the Champions League.
Definitely.
But eventually had a bad run of form. Even with Cagliari, when he joined Cagliari, it was terrible. He was sacked early on. So I think maybe a return
and
to
Verona
Sassuolo.
As well.
Yeah. A return to Sassuolo for him might rejuvenate his career as well as Sassuolo as a club. Another interesting idea, bro, is I don't know about the wages, though, and I don't know how possible this is, but Bielsa.
Ooh, Bielsa would be an interesting one. I think it'd bring more of, again, it's the same thing as the Tinkerman.
Yeah.
He's going to encourage that fluid play. But actually, Bielsa is very solid defensively as well.
Yes.
He would encourage players sliding into tackles, keeping their shape and staying in that, like with Leeds. We saw Leeds that they were a unit. They were hard to penetrate when he was there, especially in the Championship. In the Premier League, it was a different story. That would be a good shout.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I just wonder if it's doable for Sassuolo, if it's too much, you know?
Because
he has clout as a manager.
It's tough. Sassuolo can only attract people who want to move to Italy, young managers that this would be the highlight of their career, essentially. So... people that are smaller than Sassuolo, or else Serie A resident managers that see the true value of Sassuolo, because otherwise this is not a franchise team that people aspire to manage. Yeah. It would have to be a project that, I don't know, fucking, what's his name, the manager of Malta. He was the manager of Malta. Devis Manja would be the next manager of Sassuolo. Yeah.
Who do you think he'd pick on?
He would... pick on, I think, Berardi.
Berardi, you think?
I think it'd pick on Berardi, uh-huh. Just so you guys know, there were strong allegations about him making sexual passes at Maltese players, telling them, like, if you fucking, I don't know, show me your ass, you can play tomorrow. I don't know, trying to keep it PG-13.
Yeah, that's a really good approach.
Show me your ass. You start striker tomorrow if you show me your ass.
No, I think Pinamonti would be fucked, bro.
No, Pinamonti would be fucked as well. Pinamonti would be fucked.
Yes. There was another point I wanted to make.
What
the fuck was it? God knows.
About the manager.
Iacchini is one of those managers that you mentioned. One of the there's Ballardini and Iacchini. They're okay. Like the relegation experts.
Yes.
So if this goes tits up for Sassuolo, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys came in as a caretaker. There's also Sampaoli who's available. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I do think, however, that Dionisi should be given more time.
He should be given more time because nothing is favoring him. And even though nothing is favoring him, they're still playing that fluid and dynamic football. However, he needs to control that four at the back, man.
There aren't many options for him.
Yeah, and maybe there's not much funding to go into signing players. Well, not enough funding. They're selling players left, right, and center. They must have funding to... They just need to be a bit smarter in the market because they're so focused on replacing those big players up front that they're forgetting that the actual problem is the defensive region. Mm-hmm. They were smart with the way that they replaced those players. You know, they got Lauriente, they got Torsvet. However, Pinamonti, maybe in hindsight, well, it's a shock that Pinamonti isn't performing well. Mm-hmm. And maybe they should give more time to Alvarez, and that'll prove to be a smart signing from their end as well.
Perhaps. Sassuolo currently sit in 16th with 16 points.
Wow.
While Fiorentina sit in 9th with 23 points.
The next game we're going to be covering is Salernitana 1, Torino 1. So Salernitana starting their 3-1-4-2 formation with Ochoa in goal, a back line of Fazio, Danilo Lich and Bron. Bohinen was in the register role with Bradaric out on the left and Kandreva on the right. It was Vilena and Caviglia in the midfield with Dia and Bonazzoli up front. That is scary, man, Dia and Bonazzoli up front. For Torino, they lined up in their 3-4-2-1 formation with Milinkovic-Savic in goal and the back line of Zima, Shores and Buongiorno. They had Lazaro out on the right and Vojvoda out on the left. They had Linetti and Lukic in midfield with Vlasic out on the right and Radonjic out on the left and Sanabria up front. So things kicked off in the 36th minute where Sanabria scored a flying header after a great Lazaro cross. Shortly after, Shores hit the post with a header. It looked like he was going to make it 2-0 over there. Shortly after the restart, then in the 49th minute, Vilena shot into the bottom near corner from outside of the area to finish off a beautiful Salernitana counterattack. For the rest of the game, and then it was basically Torino piling men forward, trying to get 3 points out of this, as they proved to be, they looked better than Salernitana in this game. Ochoa, just save after save, particularly his save in the 84th minute on Ricardo Rodriguez at the near post, pushing it onto the post. Some fantastic saves by Ochoa again, man.
Yeah, and Torino totally dominated this game. That 62% ball possession, the most key passes of the match day, the most attempts of the match day. The difference for Salernitana or their saving grace was Ochoa.
Ochoa, 100%.
Yes. And it's Ochoa's world and we're just living in it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Where does he rank right now, currently? We've only seen two games of him, to be honest, but he looks like a top five goalkeeper in the Liga.
At the moment, I mean, like you said, it's his first two games. It's interesting because normally with any other goalkeeper that I've watched play before, I can tell you like where I believe that they rank just from their qualities. But when we only watch this guy a couple of times every 4 years with Mexico in the World Cup, then it's, I can't believe I forgot the word World Cup over there. You see him a couple of times every 4 years at the World Cup. You can't really gauge how, if he's actually good or if he has
inspired
moments.
Exactly.
Right now, he looks like a good goalkeeper.
He
was
super.
Coming out and blocking shots, making himself big. Interesting one, man. He's definitely the keeper that is on hottest form right now after the World Cup break.
And he's replacing Luigi Sepa, who's a fantastic goalkeeper himself. Mm-hmm. And this is a great move for Ochoa. You know, he's playing in Serie A. He's living in Salerno, one of the most beautiful places in Italy. It's a good place to retire for him. So, life is good for Ochoa at the moment.
100%, man. Again, I can't stress on how much better Torino looked in this game. Again, it does go down to maybe the finishing touch. Okay, this time it was Ochoa that kind of moved the focus onto him rather than the striker situation for Torino. I have to say, Sanabria scored a true striker's goal with that flying header in this game. However, they're still lacking that target, man. someone that can play with his back towards goal and his, and you know, facing goal as well inside that area. Someone lethal, someone that can finish off a chance,
yes,
pretty much. And just a focal point, having that focal point up front, man.
In fact, you look at the stats, Torino should be winning this. Oh, it doesn't 100%. Make sense to create this much, to press this much and to not win. And that's what they're missing, a target, yeah, man, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if that problem will ever be sorted.
Yeah.
Ochoa, 7 saves, as we said, man. That's another 7 saves. That's 14 saves in 2 games, by the way. Massive.
Madonna.
Vlasic had the most key passes and the most goal-scoring chances of the match. They were a very, very good player over there. Torino, again, just superlatives all around.
Yeah, superlatives all around, except for the striking department, no?
That's it, exactly. So not technically all around.
Exactly. Salernitana did what we have described as what good teams do. It's be the shitter team and still get away with something.
Yeah.
Torino are intent on 23 points, level on points with Fiorentina, while Salernitana sit in 14th on 18 points, level with Monza.
Monday night madness. Verona.
Like the way you move.
Yes, sir. Verona 2, Cremonese 0. Verona lined up with a 3-4-2-1 formation. Montepo was in goal. Ceccherini was at the back with Hien and Davidovic. Doig was on the left. De Paoli on the right with Tameze and Ilic as the midfield duo. Lazovic and Kalon played behind Juric. For Cremonese, it was a 4-2-3-1 formation with Carnesecchi in goal, Ser Nicola on the right, Lacoschvili on the left, Bianchetti and Ferrari as a centre-back pairing. I hate reading Cremonese's lineup.
Lacoschvili, even if you told me 100 times, I won't pronounce his name correctly.
Lacoschvili Cantare. Castagnetti was in the middle alongside Piquel, with Zanemakia on the right, Valeri on the left, Bonaiuto as the attacking midfielder, and Dessers up front. Thank God that is over. Now, it all kicked off in the 9th minute when Lazovic scored a striker's goal. He took a hard ball down, brilliantly turned and nailed the ball in from close range. It was a Yaya Kalon assist.
Yeah, but he looked like fucking Dennis Bergkamp over there, man.
Literally.
It was brilliant by Darko Lazovic.
Verona didn't leave it till very long to get another one. In the 26th minute, there was a brilliant run by Doig, who played a brilliant pass. He's such a good player, Doig. He's like the Aaron Hickey regen, no?
Yeah.
The next big Scottish youngster.
Uh-huh.
Also plays fullback. It's uncanny.
Yeah.
So Doig unleashed Lazovic, who finished very cleanly into the bottom corner. Lazovic playing closer to goal is really paying off for them. 100%. These 2 early goals were enough for Verona to kill the game off. Cremonese didn't really get into it at all. And it was a very professionally done job by Verona, maintaining a 2-0 lead. We saw how they say that a 2-0 lead is the most dangerous lead to have in football.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that twice.
Exactly.
In this
Lazio match, and Milan. They couldn't do what Verona did.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And Milan drew 0-0 to Cremonese. So many teams have struggled against Cremonese. Mm-hmm. Verona come out and beat them 2-0. They had 9 shots, 4 on target, of course. 2 of them were the Darko Lazovic goals, which were absolutely sensational. It was a very quick and lethal start by Verona, something they were notorious for last season. And they showed it again in this game. Cremonese grew into the game throughout the game.
Yeah.
They had 14 shots. 5 of them on target, 5 off target, and 4 blocked. So, once again, Cremonese, you definitely can't say that they don't try, huh?
No, certainly not. But the thing is, Verona scored too early and just let them play. They let Cremonese play and they just sat back, you know. So, obviously, the stats are going to be in Cremonese's favor, in possession stats, 53%. But in reality, Verona allowed that to happen. It was a tactical choice, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't do the amateur thing that Lazio did and committed too many men forward, for example, on a mm-hmm. corner. You know, they actually stayed back.
Yeah. I still don't think, as much as I agree with you, I still don't think it's a choice to let a team have 14 shots and 5 on target. Because 5 goals, 5 shots on target is very dangerous. So perhaps Verona still lack that intensity that they had for the past few seasons. And they mm-hmm. still let teams play their game when they're trying to be a bit more controlling. They also only had 3,800 supporters in their stadium, which could have, you know, played a role over there.
Definitely. I'm sure.
They lack intensity. They only have 3,000 supporters.
That's it. This game was played for 3,000 people. Isn't that mad?
3.8.
3.8. But yeah. Hien had a pretty good game. He had 13 recoveries. Verdi played pretty well this game too. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm impressed by Verona and how they've managed to pick things up. Especially Lazovic, man. I did not think that he had these types of finishes in him. You know, I think he could finish the ball this well.
Yeah, I think he was struggling to adapt to that new role in the attacking midfield area. He was, however, this time utilized as, okay, an attacking midfielder, but more to the left-hand side, as he had Callon on the right as well. So it was like he was a left forward, so to say. So that allowed him to be dangerous on the ball. And rather than taking too much of a creative role, it allows him to make runs in behind the defense, especially with a player like Juric up front, who can play with his back towards goal and to drag a defender off with him, and Lazovic gets in behind the spaces. I think this is a dangerous position for Lazovic to be in, particularly with Doig around his flank as well. I think they could really turn things around, and Lazovic came back from injury as well and he's looking brushed up. We hope he can keep that up.
Me too, bro. Matthias, our resident fan. Fan, I wouldn't call him a fan.
He's our fucking brother, man.
Yeah, he's the man, you know. Matthias is the fucking man. He sent us a text summarizing the first half of the Verona game. He watched it. He's the man who announced Ilic watch. You know, he said Ilic is back from injury. He's going to be instrumental for Verona. He said, I watched the first half of the Verona game up until the goals were scored. Ilic was rather mediocre. The game was more of a midfield battle, and I think Tameze did more noticeable things, as well as Doig and Lazovic were decisive in both goals. Then Verona tried to control the pace and possession more, and Ilic was more involved up until Sulemana was brought on instead. It's true, Ilic did grow into the game, and I think he will grow into the season as he has just come back, and his performances will most likely pick up. I think he will be instrumental, and I do like Tameze as a midfield partner. I think he's very good.
Yeah, that's good balance, having Tameze and Ilic. Both can offer a lot going forward, and they're both very stable in the defensive areas as well. I think, Ilic just needs more minutes to get back on track, to get his fitness back. It's good that when they, like Matthias said, when they started controlling the tempo and the play a bit more, he saw much more of the ball over there, allowed him to play it around, just get a feel for it again. And I think it's still Ilic watch for the rest of the season.
Verona currently sit in 18th with 9 points, while Cremonese sit last in 20th with 7 points.
The next and final game that we're going to be covering is the game that fucked our bet. Spezia 0, Lecce 0. So for Spezia, it was a 3-5-2 formation with Drągowski in goal and a backline of Nicolau, Kiwior and Amian.
That's how they say it. They all say Drągowski, the commentator.
I don't know where the N comes from, because if there was an accent somewhere, I'll say, okay, if there's an accent on the G, it means the G is Ng. But there's nothing. It's just Drągowski, and for some reason, there's an N somewhere.
Yeah, man. Polish names are a nightmare. Yeah. Sir Szczesny.
That I get, because it's like an S-Z-C-H-Z.
Yeah,
so it's like, sure, just take your time to say that. Szczesny. So a back line of Nicolau, Kiwior and Amian for Spezia, with Reka out on the left and Home out on the right as the two wing backs. Bastoni, Ampadu and Burabia in the midfield, with Inzola and Giassi up front, the same way it has been for all these years.
Come to think of it, Piontek. There's an N there too. It's spelled Piatek, but it's pronounced Piontek.
But there is an accent somewhere, I believe, in Piontek.
I don't know, man. I have Polish colleagues, I'll ask them.
And if there are any Polish listeners, please educate us. We don't want to come off as dickheads like we're pronouncing everything wrongly. So please do educate us.
You've heard us pronounce Coupe Minors now.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Deron.
Deron. For Lecce, it was their 4-3-3 formation with Falcone in goal, a backline of Jean-Dre, Baschirotto, Umtiti and Gallo. It's Gonzalez in midfield alongside Blin and Male, with Strefetz out on the right, Di Francesco out on the left, and Lorenzo Colombo up front. This was a 0-0. However, there were many chances for Lecce in particular, who managed to hit the post twice through Gonzalez and Blin. Otherwise, I don't think either team did enough to win the game. I do think if I favored anyone in this game, it must have been Lecce, but still not enough. What do you think, bro?
Lecce had more chances, or the better chances rather. Well, more chances, but 4 shots on target. And Spezia had more possession. So it was a weird one. You know, once again, it was an extremely rainy day. It seemed like Inzola and Colombo weren't going to score from the get-go. The two posts, it got so close, man. One of those goes in and we would have won our bet.
Yeah.
But fuck it, we move. There's nothing to do. This is a biscotto, as they say, shared points for Spezia and Lecce, 1 point each. They live to fight another day.
Yes, sir. I don't think there's much any of the teams could have done in this scenario. Sure, they were both, like me and Jake, were debating in the beginning of the episode. On one hand, with the conditions of the game, with the opponents that each team had, you could take an approach whereby you want to get a singular point in this game. There obviously is a large gap between the bottom three and then 17th. In fact, Spezia are in 17th, they're on 15, and then Verona 18th on 9 points. So there's a healthy gap over there. So Spezia would have been happy to sit back. Lecce and then are pushing mid-table, bro. They're in 11th. And had they won that game, they'd be 1 point behind Torino.
It's all about intent. Their defense, man.
It's all their about defense their defense.
So good. And again, they have... It's a similar kind of vibe to Juve, where they have a lit defense. Yes, you know, Baskerotta and Umtiti are amazing. Jandre and Gallo out wide are amazing too. Then they have Strefezza, Banda, Colombo and Di Francesco, who are all capable of these random moments, you know?
Yeah.
Similarly to what we said about Juve. They're like a mini budget Juve.
Yeah.
Also, I like Male and the way he's playing on loan from Fiorentina.
Mm-hmm.
He's cut his hair and it's a new start for him. New year, new Male.
Yeah, I find Male to be so clumsy. There's no denying that he's a good footballer, but I've never seen him perform myself. Every time I've seen Male on the pitch, I always said kind of, okay, this guy's all right at best, you know what I mean? But at Lecce, we're seeing a bit of a different side to him. He's...
More involved, definitely. Exactly. More of an opportunity.
Exactly. Back at Fiorentina, he had way too many competitors alongside him. But Lecce played well, man. Lecce played very well, to be quite frank. They hit the post twice. They looked very positive. And yeah, I think out of the... Ooh, who wins in a match between Lecce and Monza tomorrow, like?
If Lecce had to play Monza tomorrow, it would be...
What would you bet on that rather than what would happen?
Fuck, man.
What would
you bet on that? I'd bet. Who's home?
Lecce are home.
I'd see the odds of a Lecce or a draw, to be honest. But I think that would be a draw, to be honest. A similar result. These bottom teams, when they come up, these lowly teams, they tend to draw.
Yeah. And it's always interesting seeing two Serie B teams in inverted commas in Serie A, because they know each other so well. They battled each other for so many times in Serie B. So who knows what would happen over there.
Let's just give you a quick rundown of what's to come. On Friday, we have Napoli against Juventus. That's the massive game of the weekend. Then we have Lecce against Milan, Sassuolo against Lazio, Udinese against Bologna, Roma against Fiorentina, Cremonese against Monza, Inter Verona, Torino Spezia, Atalanta Salernitana, and Empoli Sampdoria. Stretching on from Friday to Monday.
I can't believe the Friday game, though. I can't believe Friday, it's on Friday. Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think? What do you think?
What do I think of...
Napoli-Juve. Who's
taking Napoli-Juve. Honestly, either 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go straight for a draw. That's an interesting
bet. So they'll concede their first goal, Juve, in 8 games.
If they do, it's against Napoli.
Yeah.
I have noticed Guevara being more contained. He was contained against Inter. Mm-hmm. He was contained against Sampdoria. Will he have more freedom with Juve's wing-backs? Depends who plays on the right-hand side over there.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see that direct. Do Napoli get their second 1-0 loss of the season?
It could be, man. I don't know. It's one of the best attacks in the league against the best defense in the league. So
no matter what happens, Milan need to beat Lecce and Milan need to gain ground on either go second or just gain ground on Napoli.
While Inter play a bogey team as well in Verona.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Interesting match day to come, guys. Stay tuned and send us your thoughts.
Yep. Love you all, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Another short one, obviously, with the tight schedule, but we hope you enjoy it. We hope we gave you enough info. Do send us your feedback. Follow us everywhere. Rate us everywhere. And take care.
@SeriaA Spotlight.